Today on Vox Talks Economics, the policy choices to slow the spread of epidemics. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe and give us a review too, preferably one with 5 stars. As the days turn colder in the UK and nervous epidemiologists watch COVID infections rise, we're returning to the subject of non-pharmaceutical interventions this week. I'm with Flavio Doxver of the University of Cambridge. He's one of the authors of a paper that investigates how human behaviour affects the spread of disease from place to place and the optimal public health response when it does. So, Flavio, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You refer to your work as economic epidemiology. So how's that different to ordinary epidemiology?
So the kind of work we do has its offspring, traditional epidemiology. Mm-hmm. But what we do is that we, on top of the standard models of disease dynamics, we also consider behavior explicitly as part of the model and also policy to influence behavior. So that's the main point of departure. And second, we also take a broader view of what is the remit of disease control. And rather than look just at disease outcomes, we also look at the broader impacts on society in terms of both economic outcomes and also social outcomes.
And in this particular context, you're looking at how disease spreads from region to region and how policy in one place affects the spread of the disease in another place. I thought that's something we'd already know everything we need to know about, because our experience of the last 2.5-3 years is all about that.
So it's correct to say that epidemiologists and public health officials and, for example, people sitting in the World Health Organization have certainly thought about what are the international ramifications of a global pandemic. That's absolutely true. Now, the reason that there's still more to say on the subject is that they have not systematically studied policymaking in this kind of context the way that the economists do. And that throws up a new set of questions that we're not able to deal with using the traditional paradigm within epidemiology.
So on the epidemiological side, what model are you using here? How do you make that into an economic model as well?
The kind of models that people like me look at have two layers of analysis. There's an underlying mathematical description of the natural world, as it were, the epidemic itself, and that in principle can change from disease to disease, whether it's HIV, syphilis, or in this case, COVID-19. Now, on top of that, we model explicitly decision makers or people in the population as making choices and facing trade-offs. So for example, you might decide whether or not to go to the cinema, and that could be a decision that is made trading off risks of becoming infected versus the enjoyment of going to the cinema. So what we do is that we build on top of the mathematical epidemiological model a decision-making model that allows us to look at the interaction between disease dynamics on the one hand and individual decision-making on the other hand.
Okay, our first iteration, I suppose, is the policy of just not having a policy, letting everyone do what they want, move from one region to another. So what happens when there is no policy to mitigate the spread of disease?
The first insight of economic epidemiology is that to the extent that people are self-interested, they will tend to protect themselves to the extent that they themselves find personally optimal. Now, in a world in which there's no intervention, people will then protect themselves, but they will tend to protect themselves less than we might think is socially desirable. And the reason for that is the classical one of negative externalities. If you get infected, you might infect a third person. And if you don't factor in that third person's welfare, you protect yourselves less than society might want to be the case. In an equilibrium, in a world in which people are not directed by a government or by a public health authority to change behavior, they will change behavior, but they will not take care of each other to the extent that we would like to be the case. In a world with many countries, this will be true both within country and across country. So you can think of intra-jurisdictional externalities and inter-jurisdictional externalities. For example, what happens in the UK influences also what happens in France and vice versa if there are population flows between those two jurisdictions.
I see. And we've actually seen both of those policies working out, haven't we? We saw policies in the UK, policies within the US. but also those travel restrictions.
That's absolutely true. I just to remind you, back in March 2020, the Boris Johnson government were very reluctant to introduce lockdowns. And there was a veiled threat from the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, saying, well, if you don't get a handle on your disease numbers, we will block British tourists from entering France. So he was fairly blunt.
Yes, it all seems so far away now, but it is so recent and it was so important. So we have to introduce the idea of what economists call planners, government, some kind of policy to curtail our freedom to move around. And you draw a distinction in this paper between what you call a uniform policy and a delegated policy. So how do these two types of policy, how do they correspond to the real world situations that we're talking about here?
Let me first give you a few examples of those two policies.
Yeah.
And then I will try to tie them together and see how those two policies exemplify properties of what would be a desirable overall strategy, say globally. A delegated policy is one in which, say, a government could delegate to subnational governments the decisions on whether or not to curb disease progression. For example, within the four nations of the United Kingdom, health policies are devolved. Mm-hmm. And so the Scottish government could, in principle, make a completely different policy than the English policy. Exactly what happened. In the United States, similarly, the lockdown or stay-in-place measures were introduced at the state level and sometimes even at the sub-state level. So this is the issue of delegation. Should we or should we not delegate these things to smaller decision-making units? The second question is whether or not we should introduce uniform policies. This is maybe more pertinent within jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. And so the question there becomes, should we make the policy sensitive to local variation in disease outbreaks? For example, should Manchester have different lockdown measures than the Isle of Wight? Or should London be different than Leeds and so on? If we tailor the lockdown measures to local conditions, I would call that a policy that is not uniform because it's not the same across all regions of the jurisdiction.
And again, thinking back a couple of years, those uniform policies that were imposed were very controversial because some people, and there was reason in what they said, well, there is no spread of disease here, and yet we have these restrictions on our freedom.
It's absolutely true. So in the beginning, when people were, you know, still getting to grips of what is the optimal way of, the reasonable way to confront the disease, they resorted to very blunt, coarse policies like one size fits all lockdown measures across the country. Later on, most countries became more sophisticated. For example, in the United Kingdom, they introduced so-called tiers, where if you were in a tier one region, you could do this much. If you were in a tier three region, you could do less and so forth. In Germany, they had something similar called hotspot regulation, where if your particular county had more than a certain amount of new cases per 100,000 inhabitants, then they would do this much and so forth. So these were examples of locally targeted policies that were put in place so as to create as little damage as possible while still achieving good outcomes. Now, if I may, maybe I could tie up those.
Yes.
If we take a step back and think about government of a large country, which has maybe a lot of varied sub-localities, there are two main considerations that we'd like to be able to tackle. And an optimal policy will be some kind of weighing of those two considerations. Mm-hmm. On the one hand is the one I've just mentioned, which is that we would like as far as possible to target interventions to local conditions. If there are no infections in the Isle of Wight, we don't want to close down the entire economy just because there are infections in some other part of the country. So that's the first consideration. We want to target things. The other consideration is the one we talked about earlier, which is one of externalities. If you have two adjacent regions and one of them does crazy things in terms of disease control, then that negatively impacts the other region. So think of France versus the United Kingdom. A benevolent social planner or an enlightened public health authority would recognize that if you delegate policies to subnational decision makers, they may not necessarily do what's right for the whole country. Or in the case of an international context, one country might not do what's right for itself and the neighboring country. Now, those two considerations is something that is usually not present in models that don't have a spatial structure where you have many different regions. That brings us to the question of when is one consideration more important than another consideration?
Yes, absolutely, because this is what the model delivers, isn't it?
That's right. So I think here it's useful to distinguish two extreme cases.
Yeah.
So we have these two populations and they have individuals that travel across the borders. And so as a citizen in one of these populations, you will meet people that are your neighbors, but you might also meet people that come from the adjacent region. And that's exactly the sense in which we are interconnected. Now, those connections could be either very weak or they could be very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Say two regions that are geographically contiguous would be very strongly connected because people just cross the boundary, say to work or to play or to do other things. Another example, another extreme example would be two far-flung regions, say, you know, Alaska and the rest of mainland USA.
Mm-hmm.
So they, of course, they have flows between them, but they're much weaker than in the other example. It turns out, any epidemiologist worth his salt will know this, is that if you have two regions, then the strength of these linkages will determine the extent to which disease dynamics are synchronized.
Mm-hmm.
If they're very strongly connected, then the disease patterns will tend to be very similar. And it's very intuitive that if we meet each other very often and we're in different jurisdictions, we're likely to have similar experiences. In the extreme, if they're perfectly homogeneous, those two regions, we wouldn't even think of it as two regions, right?
Yeah.
Equivalently, if you have relatively weak connections, then over time, disease dynamics can diverge quite radically. They would have different experiences, even though they remain connected. Now, let's take it back to the two policy considerations we thought of earlier. Let's start by taking strong connections. When regions are strongly connected, that means they have similar experiences in terms of disease dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
That means that locally targeting policies is not so important because they're very similar, their experiences.
They will be the same policies.
They will be the same policies, right. So there's no point in differentiating between left and right part of Cambridge because they have exactly the same experiences.
Yeah.
So therefore, targeting is not so important. But because these regions are now strongly connected, the other consideration becomes very important, which is the one of externalities. The stronger connected the regions are, the more does policy in one region impact outcomes in the other region. And so we find then when we have strongly connected regions, then coordination or policy coordination becomes more important. Targeting becomes less important. In the other extreme, when you have weak connections, disease patterns are going to be different. That means it's much, much more important to target policies to local experiences. But because we have weak connections, what happens in one jurisdiction in terms of policy have relatively weak effects on that in the other jurisdiction. And so really what we find is that whether one consideration or the other is more important really depends on the nature of the interactions between those two regions.
We have reported many times in the last 2 years on policy ideas designed to limit the impacts of epidemics. Try these two from 2021. In April, the episode titled COVID-19 is Reshaping European Economic Policy. And in February, our episode on how Africa can recover from COVID-19.
Now, there is also a different policy. We could call it the Australia policy, couldn't we? Of just closing the borders, stopping people moving from region to region. What does the model say about that?
We do some experiments on closures. And unfortunately, we don't have very clear-cut results. Turns out to be very, very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, we've only looked at very simple closures that basically reduce flows by a fixed amount throughout the pandemic.
You'd think it would be really quite simple, wouldn't you? You think this would be the simplest case of all?
Well, it's not so simple because there are costs and benefits to having open borders. Remember, if you have, say, high infection numbers in your country, you might be quite happy for lots of people to leave your country if they're infected because they're no longer infecting your people. But in practice, it's been a point of contention because these things are usually not decided on a reciprocal basis. There were lots of examples where the United Kingdom said, you know, you can't travel to Portugal, and the Portuguese government was very unhappy because...
Yes, I remember, yeah.
Yeah, so these things are complicated, and this is, I think, is going to be one of the areas we're going to explore going forward, which is what is the right kind of mix of policies that both takes internal disease suppression measures and inter-jurisdictional measures into account at the same time.
We're discussing this in your office in the University of Cambridge. Looking back, we've got pretty good knowledge of what happened. We have time to think. In 2020, policy was being made with very poor information. We didn't really know what was going on. We didn't know how the disease was spreading. Also, it's always political. People don't like having their freedoms restricted. So how well did the policymakers do with what we know now?
It's always difficult to quantify exactly how badly we've done things. Because it involves a counterfactual, which is what would we have done had we done things, using more information. Now, it's clear that there were a number of unforced errors that were obvious even at the time. So the first one of those were that we were probably too timid in introducing lockdown measures. Doing it too late meant that we probably had to do too much later. A second example, which most economists will probably agree was an ill-conceived policy, was the eat-out-to-help-out policy that incentivized people to meet each other.
Yes, for non-Brits, this is basically the government gave people incentives to go out to restaurants, keep the restaurants in business.
That's right.
But of course, a lot of people caught COVID while they were in the restaurant.
That's right. So on the one hand, you had the health authorities trying to curb infections. Yeah. And on the other hand, you had the Treasury handing out subsidies, essentially, for people to go physically and have meals. And what many economists pointed out is that it's a laudable goal to want to help hospitality. But what you could have done is either send them a check or insist that it had to be takeaway only. Mm. That would have been a policy that would have been better and has still achieved the same objectives in terms of economic well-being and even better ones in terms of disease progression, right? Of disease spread. I think there's been a recognition that these issues of coordination are important. So there's been recently a report by The Lancet looking at COVID measures. They point that as one of the main things that need to be sorted out. The World Health Organization and the OECD also have explicitly called for better coordination of disease control measures. And in fact, they also talk about, targeting of policies. And again, just to call us back to the UK context, the just launched COVID-19 inquiry would be a great venue for some of these issues.
Yes.
To be revisited and see whether lessons can be learned going forward.
Well, one of the great advantages of economic modeling is it gives us the potential to be able to put in decision rules. We are now resigned to the fact that this sort of pandemic might happen again. It might be COVID, it might be something else. So next time this happens, should we create ahead some more formal targeting and mitigation policy thresholds? If this happens, then do this.
For starters, we should be really clear about what the objectives are.
Mm.
The United Kingdom government, and in fact, most governments, were never very clear about what the objectives were. First, it was not to overwhelm the NHS. Then it was getting us through winter. Then it was to postpone things until the vaccine comes. There was not a coherent articulation of what is the objectives here. An economist would say, well, it has to be something with the economy, has to be something with health, has something with social well-being. Policy is not created in a vacuum. It has to achieve something. And once you know what you want to achieve and what is feasible, then you can back out what would be the desirable policies. And those policies would in general be a function or be, sensitive to a number of different issues, such as the basic rate of reproduction, but also how costly is it to close down, say, schools or workplaces, public transport. Rather than say, well, we need to have more refined policies, I think it should be the other way around. We should articulate what is it we want to achieve, what is feasible, and then we will figure out what are the right policies given those objectives and those constraints that we face. And those constraints are not negligible. As you said before, in the early days, we just didn't know. We didn't know who were most at risk. We didn't know exactly whether surfaces could help infection or whether it was just airborne.
Yeah.
We didn't know whether we could recover and be susceptible again, so whether we had waning immunity. There were a host of issues we didn't know and that we only learned as we went along. So it's completely natural that at the early stages of a situation like that, you try to feel your way. But I do think that this has been a bit of a wake-up call. I hope it has been.
Mm-hmm.
And that people will take to heart that there has been mistakes and we need to do better. Because even though many, many people died and lost their livelihoods,
mm-hmm.
It could have been much, much worse.
Well, if this isn't a wake-up call to policymakers, then those policymakers really can't be woken up by anything, can they? It's very interesting talk about it, Flavio, not least because what economic modeling can do, but also it delineates the space between modeling and policy.
Yeah, it kind of forces you to be clear-eyed about what is it we need to do and how do we do it.
Flavio, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
The The paper is called Epidemics in Space: Control, Targeting, and Delegation. And the authors are Darren Hoover and Flavio Toxfer. It is discussion paper 17480 at CPR.
Next time on Vox Talks Economics, how does trade policy affect competition?